This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Thank you, Dan, for the introduction and welcome here at the Christian War Room. And today, we are carrying on with the evolution. So we had one talking between about the massive media manipulation and how very easy things are just sort of construed as facts. And the problem is whenever you listen to the media, when you read a book, when you, same as, you know, what we are doing here, you know, I'm talking to you. And obviously, since it's a one-way media, you cannot talk back to me. Yeah? And so you either take the information or you reject it. But if you are quite open, there's a good chance that you will take the information I'm presenting to you. Now, I'm encouraging you, test everything that is being said on here. All I want to be is just a signpost to make you think about stuff and to find your own conclusions. One thing I think we, which is more sort of obvious than ever before, is we cannot take things on face value. We just cannot do it. There's a lot of integrity has gone out of science. There's a lot of bias in the media. There's a lot of bias in science where things are pushed a certain direction and where there's a status quo, and the status quo is protected by all means. Okay, we are talking about evolution here, the theory of evolution, and needless to say, I'm not a friend of it, and I think I wouldn't go as far and say that the theory of evolution is the root of all evil, but it has caused a lot of problems, it has caused a lot of evil. And just to give you an idea, we had dialectic materialism, so that's a philosophy communism is based upon. And even though today, I think the states where communism is still applied, we can count them by one hand. I think Cuba, and Cuba is pretty much leaving it. Then we've got Venezuela. Then we've got China, but China is only by name communist. Everything else is pretty much more capitalist than anywhere else in the world, and it's gone complete turnaround. And it's gone, you know, it's finished. It came, yeah, seemingly out of nowhere, and it just evaporated, and there's hardly anybody following this doctrine anymore. But well, what it's done is it was based on dialectic materialism, and the whole concept was really based on evolution, you know, that we come from dust, yeah, through, you know, survival of the fittest and the theorems which are there. And suddenly we are here, and there's no God, there's no creator. All we are accountable to is to ourselves or maybe to society. Then we've got the other extreme. We've got, you know, racism and the philosophy of fascism, which, you know, both of them were born in the 1800s. And we're pretty much lived out in the 1900s, and some of it is, you know, still around today. Some of it was around pretty much for about 100 years, from the mid 1800s to the 1900s. It's very interesting as well. I mean, just making this point here on the Christian War Room. When you look at all the stuff that was sort of initiated in the 1800s, and it pretty much shaped the 1900s. And the impact was phenomenal. You know, many people died for strange ideas. Many paradigms have been completely shifted. And it all started sometime sort of the mid-1800s. Just to give you an idea, you know, we had the Industrial Revolution, mid-1800s. We had the invention of the automobile, late 1800s. We had concepts of telegraphy and communications and wireless telegraphy. That was also the late 1800s, where a lot of the foundations of what later became wireless technology sort of came out in the early 1900s. Not quite sure when the Wright brothers were about, but it was just sort of beginning 1900s, early, maybe late 1800s. So not quite sure what the exact year was. Okay, what else have we got? We've got Marxism, born in the 1800s. We have got fascism, born in the 1800s. We've got big revivals from a Christian perspective. A lot of them, I think in the 1800s, there were about three visible revivals, and then some of them were sort of early 1900s. Yeah, so it's all around one period of time, and it really shaped the 1900s. You know, even till today, some for the better, some for worse. But here we are in the 21st century, and we are pretty much standing on whatever, you know, has come out of these periods of times. But at the same time, we've got the theory of evolution, and that came out of the 1800s and really got momentum in the 1900s. And it has led a lot of people away from God. You know, that is really where we are and where I'm standing here. And something which is very unsubstantiated, something which has got, you know, it's only built on presumptions, is standing today and is considered to be scientific, is considered to be fact, and is considered to be on the same way where, you know, people are finding cures for all sorts of stuff, where people fly to the moon and use a lot of scientific data they have developed. And this is pretty much pushed on the same level. And yet, when you look at it, and all you need to do is just ask a few key questions, and you come to the point that, you know, I mean, this is all just, it's just a lot of tosh. Yeah, it's a lot of foam. Somebody beats it all up, but there's no substance behind it, no real substance. There's no real science behind it. There's no empirical science. All it is just guesswork, and then we've got a couple of people making a lot of assumptions, and that is considered to be fact. And then we've got the peer review system, and once it's peer reviewed and a couple of guys have accepted it, it's all given as fact. Okay, what I want to do today is I want to look at the scientific method, and there was a guy called William Moore at Wayne State University. He stated this in a debate he had with Kent Hovind. And anyway, I'm just going to read it out, what this scientific method he states, you know, based for the theory of evolution, what it says. And it says here, in general, I'm quoting, in general, we are looking for a new law by the following process. First, we guess. Then compute the consequences of the guesses to see if the law that we guessed is right, what it would imply. Then we compose the computations, results within nature, or we say experiment or experience. We compare it directly with observation to see whether it works. If it disagrees, we experiment. The experiment is wrong. With the experiment, it is wrong. And that is the key to science. And that thing is called Feynman's descriptions. Let me just repeat this. So in general, we look for a new law by the following process. First, we guess. Then we compute the consequences of the guesses to see if the law that we guessed is right, what it would imply. Then we compare the computation results within nature, or we say experiment or experience. We compare it directly with observation to see whether it works. If it disagrees with experiment, it is wrong. And again, this law is called Feynman's law. And that's actually quite shocking. So again, let me just sort of summarize what this guy is saying here, what Feynman is saying here, and it's being quoted by William Moore in this debate. And it is interesting as well, I've sort of followed a couple of debates between creationists and evolutionists. And they do a lot about this this stuff, you know, the scientific method. And again, creationists, they're accused of not following this scientific method. And because they use this method, it is considered to be correct and right. But what we find is we're going into some sort of insanity of academia, where, you know, you quote so-and-so, and you quote so-and-so, and you quote so-and-so, and then you come to a certain conclusion, and this conclusion is based on whatever so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so said. Yeah, it sort of goes into this direction. And it becomes sort of very philosophical. It's not, in my opinion, it's no longer real science, real hardcore science, where you need to have an empirical test, yeah, some sort of test environment. You describe your test, and you make it repeatable. And at that point, it becomes, you know, genuinely peer-reviewed. And you can't do this. Obviously, evolution is, according to their idea, it's millions of years old, billions of years old. So all you can do is just have guesswork and see whether, you know, the computation kind of works out. And if it doesn't, then it may not be right. And if it does, it should be correct. But who decides what the computation is? Yeah, I'll give you one example. There was a guy. There's this theory, you know, if you get like an infinite number of monkeys and they all type on a typewriter unintelligently, that eventually they would produce the Encyclopedia Britannica. Okay, my contention here is I doubt that these monkeys, by typing random letters, would ever produce a coherent sentence consisting of more than 10 words, yeah, and making sense. What they did is they did a computing program, and this is, again, is one of the arguments, you know, provided by evolutionists. And the computer program could type up, I don't know, some book, you know, War and Peace or whatever they came up with. And with that, they proved that it is possible to do it by chance. Yeah. Now, if you use a probability calculation, you take a mathematician and you work out the probability of creating even, you know, a couple of, like a page of coherent text, it's pretty much impossible. Yeah. So you come to a point where you just come to the conclusion it's an impossibility because the indices are so high, the exponential numbers are so high that that it's unachievable. Again, with the computer, it depends on the algorithm, and you can pretty much prove anything. You provide the software, you get the algorithm, and sort of, for example, there's something called brute forcing when you use this method, so eventually you get the right combination by going through all different combinations, and depending on what the algorithm is, you eventually then stop, and then you've got the code cracked. It's pretty much what they did in Bletchley Park, you know, but the idea for the war room came from, with the Colossus, where they tried to crack German code. And again, you just use some algorithms. So if you use the same cracking software, it's not that hard to, you know, get like a whole book cracked. Yeah. But you don't get it together through the law of chance. That's really the difference. And there are a lot of attempts made to just try to make a theory work, come what may. And I would put to those scientists who come up with these ideas that there's a lot of corruption, and that is not a science based on integrity. The problem is that evolution has got very little to prove. Yeah, very few arguments to make a statement that it actually works. Yeah. And this is, I think, is one of the big problems. And so they have to come up with all sorts of stuff to try and make it work because they cannot accept that it could possibly be wrong. Okay, so this is the scientific method by Feynman, based on you know, computations. And again, what are computations? Who writes the algorithms? Who makes the decisions? And then experiment and experience and observation. And then you come to the conclusion whether it works or not. Yeah. So again, you have to derive, you have to have a lot of presumptions in this process. I want to sort of look at a couple of things again. So in the end, when we look at science, we really should always embrace the empirical method, which is you've got a theory, you provide some evidence, you produce some evidence, and then you can actually have a peer review where peers can reproduce the evidence. And again, with the theory of evolution, it's very difficult. They hit walls and barriers, say, they cannot cross over, and what you find is that nothing really works. So they have to go back to forging and faking evidence in order to, and then making, even then still make presumptions on this, in order to make the theory stand. So it's a big problem when we look at evolution. All right, I'm just looking at my notes here, the notes which I've got. We've got about 15 minutes left, and let's have a look. Bill Nye, he's the so-called science guy, and he makes the argument that creationism kills science. And if you teach kids creationism, it's non-scientific, and hence it kills a scientific approach. And I have to think about it. And when you go back in history, this is really interesting. Most scientists, like Newton and others, they were Christians who assumed that man was created. Most people sort of in the 1800s, you know, who did all the research about electronics, about wireless and lots of other stuff, yeah, they were all Christians. And they were all devout Christians believing in the creation report. Obviously, I don't know the exact personal belief of most of them, but when you look at a lot of big names which sort of pop up, you know that they were strong Christians, yeah, and presumably were believing in the creation report. A lot of science which we do today, you know, within engineering, I'm an engineer, so I can relate to that a lot easier. It's totally irrelevant whether you believe that a man is made by ape, or, you know, is man's descent comes from the ape, or from Adam and Eve, from God. I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I mean, I do believe that if you know God and you've got a relationship with the living God and you are inspired by the Holy Spirit, that you can optimize your potential here on Earth. Yeah. So if you are a scientist and you are at peace with God, I think you can go a lot further than you could if you're not at peace with God. That's just my theory and that's my thinking. I may be wrong, I may not be wrong, but I don't accept what Bill Nye is saying. And all it is just like a desperate plea, because really the arguments is quite interesting as well. When you go back about 50 years, the evolutionists had really strong arguments, and the creation side wasn't really prepared. There wasn't much science dug out at the time, and it just started. So people just started getting into this because they realized this is a real problem, because we are being taught a lie. That's number one. And secondly, there's nobody who is scrutinizing the evidence the evolutionists come up with. And once the scrutiny started and you got people who looked at the science which was presented and started asking questions, it didn't take a long time and the whole concept of evolution fell down. And this is what we are doing here in this talk. So the aim of this talk in the Christian War Room is to look at about 100 ways to kill the theory of evolution, and to pretty much pull the carpet from underneath their rotten faith. Yeah, let's talk it like that, from their philosophy, from the lies they're producing to try and get people to agnosticism and get them away from God. Okay, so that is Bill Nye. He has got his argument. And one thing, again, we've got the scientific method. And when you look at this one, and this is really the purpose of the talk, it is very woolly. Pretty much anything goes with the Fenman's scientific method. So if this is scientific, I'll give you one example. Yeah, I've got a cut here. And it recently struck me. A friend of mine, he just wanted to stroke the cut, and the cut went back to him, and it sounded like "get off," yeah, or some other phrases, really nasty meow, yeah. And he was actually quite taken by it and had a bit of a chuckle and thought, you know, this sounded really like this phrase. Anyway, I could sort of use this method, yeah, and I could make a guess, yeah. And the guess I'm making now is that my cat can intelligently talk because of this anecdotal evidence I have. And now I'm going to sit down and I listen to the cat and I analyze the sounds and I use a computer program. And for example, we know that certain words are used much more often in most languages. So for example, the article, like the in German, it's der, die, das. In French, is la and le, yeah. And so I'm going to analyze the cat sounds and I look at what words are mostly used in an intelligent language and run it through a computer program. And then I'm going to run the cat sounds to the computer program to identify the sound which ties up with a certain word. Then I look at contextualizing, yeah, when she wants food, when she's happy, when she's unhappy. And I sort of analyze the sounds and see whether there's any grammatical structure to the sound. Okay, you can do this with computers. Yeah, there are lots of programs now out these days who can analyze speech and, see what the repetitive is there, and I get lots of government funding, and the funding is only going to be there if I can, you know, if I've got a chance of success. So, for example, I could say cats are so intelligent. We could use them as war cats, you know. They could just penetrate enemy lines and spy it all out and come back, and we just, you know, feed it to this computer program, and we get all the intelligence from what is going on the other side. Yeah. So the government says, oh, yeah, that's a great idea, and we're going to give you lots and lots and lots of funding. Yeah. So I sit down, you know, I do all this analysis, and from the guess, yeah, I compute the consequences of the guesses to see if the law we guessed is right. So I look at, you know, all the repetitions, and I see, yes, you know, food, there's a certain sound that comes from the cut. And, you know, when she's tired, there's a certain sound. When she, you know, is upset, there's a certain sound. When she's happy, there's a certain sound. And now we're going to, you know, put some intelligent language to it as well. And we just, you know, impose some words like in English or French or whatever language. And then we compare the computation results within nature. So we do this, yeah. Once we've computed this, and then we sort of verify this all, and then we see whether it works. And yeah, if it works, okay. If it disagrees, then the experiment was wrong. So we can do this with a cut, and then eventually we come up with this great theory that, you know, every cut has got at least about 1,000 words, because there are 1,000 different sounds, and they're highly intelligent, and even amongst one another, they have got a lot of communication going on. This is the kind of stuff we could come up with. Obviously, what I'm talking to you now is total nonsense, but we could sort of dress it up in a scientific manner, use a scientific method, which is described here, and come up with some really interesting results. Yeah. Again, you know, I'm going to come back with a couple of examples. We've got the candle in the shed. The candle in the shed gives us certain conclusions. If I go to a shed in the middle of the forest and there's a candle burning, I know somebody's been here recently. I don't know how long ago it was, but somebody was there. It's unlikely that a bear came in, because bears aren't the only people or the only creatures in this forest. But this was a highly trained bear who knew how to use a match, and he lit the candle because he thought it was pretty dark whilst he was looking for honey. When I look at the theory of evolution, I very often get the impression that they make these conclusions. So they see something, and then suddenly they have a theory about a transition from one species to another, and it's completely nonsensical. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up with the findings they've made. So they make one finding and they jump to a conclusion which is way out. Yeah. All I know, you know, I go to the shed in the middle of a forest somewhere in Alaska or whatever, in an abundant area. A candle is burning. I know pretty surely that there was a human being who knows how to use fire, who has lit the candle within the last couple of hours. And some other guy, some other lass, maybe a child, maybe an old man, old woman, is here. I can't tell who it was, but I can tell that somebody was it. It was certainly not an animal that's lit it. It wasn't unlikely to be a robot. So you apply a lot of common sense to come to this conclusion. Sometimes this common sense is just missing when you look at some of the theories which come from the theory of evolution. I mentioned this example before. You take a frog, you cut off his leg, make him jump, cut him second leg, make him jump, and he jumps less and less and less. You cut up all four legs, and eventually you tell the frog to jump, you scare the frog can't jump anymore because he's totally disabled now. And you come to the conclusion the frog is deaf. Yeah. And again, you can prove it again, you can repeat it, and it's always the same result. The frog doesn't listen anymore. And very often the common sense option is thrown overboard and some fantastic non-common sense conclusion is made. And that's pretty much what's happening with the theory of evolution. Now, I'm just talking generally. I'm doing the same as what Bill Nye does. Bill Nye says, if you don't believe in the theory of evolution, you destroy science, you lead kids to a non-scientific understanding, and this is going to be harmful for society. This is just as fanciful and as presumptuous as what I'm saying here, that the people within the theory of evolution come to wrong conclusions. I'm convinced of that, by the way, the same as I'm sure Bill Nye is convinced that people like me destroy progress. But again, I'm thinking we need to go with the truth, yeah. And the truth, the evidence we have doesn't align with evolution. It does easily align with the creationist accord. Again, I want you to ask yourself a couple of questions, okay? First of all, peer review, you know, when you get a bunch of people who would not dare to oppose the theory of evolution, once you get into the academic world and you are a creationist, you pretty much out yourself straight away. So if you believe in creationism, if you come to the conclusion that, you know, we are here by chance is pretty much an impossibility, you know, like many mathematicians do, like many professors do, you pretty much keep your opinion to yourself, because you know the consequence if you come out with your opinion and what you really think. And you might do it, you know, in the convenience of your own home, but you would never do it on a public stage because you knew the cost could be extremely high. And you're going to get haunted and persecuted by people who prefer to believe a lie rather than the truth. The next question I want you to ask is, what has the theory of evolution brought to mankind? What has it done? You know, has it done anything scientific? All I can point my fingers at. We have had a great, I think, delay in genetics and genetics research. Because it's all sort of started off from the wrong premise, but that's just my own opinion, and I think every geneticist who follows an evolutionary background or model would contest this opinion. The other thing is for certain, though, it is on a social level, it's been a big problem because people have embraced Marxism, they have embraced fascism, and both doctrines have killed millions of people. I could make the statement, and I think I'm very close to the truth, but nobody really knows the answer other than God, that in the first half of the 20th century, so that's from 1900 to 1950, that pretty much one third of mankind died on account of fascism and socialism. First half of the last century, about one third of the mankind died on account of fascism and socialism. I once went through the figures, and it again, you have to make some assumptions about the world's population at the time. The figures are not that straightforward, but when you look at the number of people who died within this period, it comes very, very close to one third. If it's not a third, maybe a quarter, maybe a fifth, but it's a very big number, and the majority of people who died in this period was on account of fascism and Marxism. Yeah, those philosophies, and obviously in countries as well where those philosophies were not followed. So, and this is, and both of them, both fascism and Marxism, both of them base their understanding on the theory of evolution. One has got a racist model, the other one has got dialectic materialism, and it's just a philosophical extension of the theory of evolution, which comes in there. The theory of evolution is bad science. That's the statement I'm making here. And where theories or where stuff is declared as scientific, it's mostly on the basis of consensus rather than fact. And this is a big problem. And we come back to this whole peer review thing. So the scientific method, the empirical scientific method of repeatable experiments is not really applied, but it's just based on some doubtful computations. What we find is that honesty has gone out of the window, and that's pretty much what the theory of evolution is all about. Theory of evolution is all about. Okay, we are coming to the end of the program. I just want you to think about this and to see where we are coming from. Today we were discussing the scientific method, which is very doubtful, and again, make sure you gear yourself up on the theory of evolution. A lot of kids, they really struggle in their faith once they are under the hands of godless professors. Okay, you're listening to the Christian War Room. God bless, and bye-bye.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.